So we need to step forward. It should not be, as they said, a rich man's church. It should be the way St. Nicholas was. He served the poor. He knew how to address the rich and have them give to the poor. But all of us together, living in this great country, to build a monument worthy of the memory of our parents and our grandparents, and of the legacy that we want to bequeath our own children and grandchildren. St. Nicholas is that light on the hill that celebrates our faith and our culture in this great land.
Today on Come Receive the Light, we're going to remember the past and talk about healing our own personal private failures.
Hotels report that when religious groups of all sorts come for a convention, internet pornography on the television is much higher than usual because there's a link between authentic and inauthentic spirituality and sexuality.
And welcome to another edition of Come Receive the Light from the Orthodox Christian Network. I'm Mike Trout, and our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos, the president of Hellenic College and Holy Cross Greek Orthodox School of Theology, and the founder of this particular ministry. We're on the web at myocn.net. That's myocn.net. Well, on this weekend, as our thoughts are in Dallas and drift back to Minnesota, Baton Rouge, and Orlando, remembering the tragedies that have so recently occurred, we want to take you back even further to September 11th, 2001.
St. Nicholas Greek Orthodox Church was completely destroyed in the collapse of the World Trade Center Tower 2 during the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks. During the weeks and the months that followed, Archbishop Demetrios of America presided over numerous funerals and memorials for many Greek Orthodox Christians who died that fateful day. He participated in interfaith and ecumenical events at city, state, and national levels. And most importantly, for St. Nicholas, the only house of worship destroyed on 9/11, the Archbishop inaugurated a dialogue with then-Governor George Pataki to rebuild the church as well as a national shrine. We have invited Father Alexander Karloutsis, the assistant to the Archbishop for Public Affairs and Proto-Presbyter of Kimisis Tis Theotoko, Dormition of the Theotokos Greek Orthodox Church in the Hamptons, to be with us today to speak about this glorious event. Father, welcome.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Father Chris, for inviting me on the program. And as you were narrating exactly what occurred on September the 11th, my mind flashed back to those moments because I'm a Port Authority police chaplain as well, appointed by the Archbishop. So I was called down on the evening of September 11th and had to deal with our people that lost their lives at the Port Authority. We lost 37 Port Authority, and one of them was a Greek American police officer who refused to leave Tower 2, trying to get everybody out. And so I was just reflecting upon him and upon others that lost their lives. And I had to go get the Archbishop the next day because he could not get into the city, but I had my police pass. And we went down, and as we were going through the crowds, people were pulling on his lasso, asking for prayers to be said. The first responders, no matter whether they were of Christian, Jewish, Muslim faith, Buddhist, they all wanted a prayer. They wanted to have a sense of the sacred because they had faced the great evil the day before.
It's amazing. Many still don't understand the difference. I know that we had a parish there that was destroyed, and we're dealing now with the construction of a shrine. So maybe you can sort of unpack for us what is going on. Why is it becoming a national shrine?
Well, it's not becoming a national shrine in the sense that we said, well, let's make it a national shrine. Mm-hmm. Once September 11th occurred, the whole nation and the whole world became New Yorkers. Mm. And so the focal point of the church, we're rebuilding it as a parish. But because it's a parish, and it's at really the Acropolis of Ground Zero, we are on top of the transportation hub, and we're overlooking the memorial. Just by the way it's being placed and centered by the Port Authority in agreement with the governor, in agreement with the archdiocese, makes it a national shrine. And people, there's 10 million people a year that will be going down there to to visit the memorials. And as they come out of, I must say, the gloomy atmosphere of the museum, they're going to be looking up and seeing a light on the hill as Jesus talked it. That is a national shrine. And so the church will function with its daily services. Baptisms, weddings will occur. There'll be funerals. All of these things will happen. However, what will take place on September the 11th? There's no longer a religious observance at the memorials on September 11th because of the separation of church and state. Well, the only church that's right at ground zero that was destroyed and will be resurrected is St. Nicholas. So therefore, that will be by natural consequence the national shrine of September 11th. And therefore, we as an obligation and a responsibility, one as Americans of Greek heritage and Orthodox faith, to bear witness to the faith that will enshrine this church in the hearts and the minds of all visitors, not only Americans.
And it's clear, as you said, that it's an interfaith memorial as well. Even though it's a Greek Orthodox church, it'll be that shining example. I was recently there, as you know, with the seniors from Holy Cross School of Theology. We visited, and we had a tour of it. And I have to tell you how impressed I was. Of course, the church is not built yet, but the floor is there. And as you go up those stairs and you look down over the reflection pool and over to the museum, it is a striking example. And as you said, a shrine for the nation, no doubt about it.
Yeah, it's not something, it's something that's actually been foisted upon us, not something that we sought. No one wanted Tower 2 to destroy the church. No one wanted people to lose their lives. But it occurred, and because of that event. Now, the good point of that great tragedy is that we can be the light of the world, and we can bring orthodoxy to those people who seek comfort. And, you know, when someone's knocking on your door, if there's a stranger, you let them in. And this is the responsibility. Jesus says, I was a stranger, and you took me in. So those people who come estranged to the faith, those people who have lost direction in their lives, if they're knocking at the door of a Greek Orthodox church because it is the shrine of orthodoxy, we must let them in, and we must be in dialogue with them. And if they're seeking comfort for their bereavement, that's what we should be doing. And, you know, people have to understand, in the history of the United States, from the founding of this great nation, somehow the providence of God, the Holy Spirit, is allowing this ethnic community and this church community, Orthodox, to build the first shrine or memorial or monument on public land. Since 1776, it has never occurred before that you could build a shrine. It's going to be a personal shrine. It'll be owned by the Archdiocese. It'll be owned by the people of the Archdiocese, the Greek Orthodox faithful, the Orthodox faithful, and the American people. And that's something that we can be very proud of, that in the history of this nation, we're the only ethnic group and only religious group that is allowed to do so.
Certainly so. It's also, as you said, a fantastic opportunity to witness the Orthodox faith. So let me ask you, are there plans to make this an Orthodox Christian hub, lectures, services in that part of New York City?
Well, yes, of course we're going to be doing that. And around September 11th, we're going to be looking forward to creating opportunities for peace initiatives and dialogue. We're going to be bringing children down that are going through conflict within their own lives and going through sorrow, and we're going to have our bereavement center open to all, and we're going to try and establish a 24-hour hotline when people are going through great crisis, because we know what it's like to be in crisis. We're going to have, and this is something we're working with, something called Gallagher Associates. They deal with the World War II Museum. They are people that are technologically focused and centered. It's a great company. You'll be able to put your iPhone on a digital platform, put your phone there, and immediately we'll say, well, this is the history of the Orthodox Church.
Incredible.
And as you well know, when St. Nicholas was established, the people that would be coming off of Ellis Island after seeing the Statue of Liberty, their first stop was at St. Nicholas and lighting a candle because they passed the seas. Well, so all of a sudden now we are going to we're going to talk about the Greek American story, how the immigration occurred in this country. And so we'll be able to share with everybody how the Greek Orthodox faithful came at time of persecution from Asia Minor, from the different parts of the world in which they were suffering, or from Greece and looking for a better life. But they kept on to this steadfastness of faith, and that's why the Orthodox Church, for example, as they go into the church itself, would all be digitalized. So if you stand in front of Christ on the icon screen, immediately it'll appear on your iPhone. What is the image of icon of Christ mean in the Orthodox tradition? What are icons about? It starts telling the story of the icon. You go to the one of the Holy Mother, it'll appear Holy Mother. If you go to the one for St. Nicholas, it'll appear St. Nicholas and tell his story. So it's our opportunity to actually preach the gospel and at the same time be the light on the hill and at the same time to welcome the stranger, all part of the tradition of the Orthodox Christian Church.
I understand that they're planning a double celebration this fall. I don't know if I'm correct or not, but the completion of the construction and the 100th year anniversary of the original St. Nicholas Church, which opened in 1916. Am I correct? And is construction on schedule as you know it?
No, the construction is being delayed a little bit simply because of the fact this is a monumental building task. We're building at Ground Zero, which is the most expensive place to build because of the concerns of the bomb threats that are constantly going there. Yeah. And so we have to be spending a great deal more money in the materials used. We have had to re-engineer certain things in order to make sure our security is appropriate with the Port Authority. So it looks like by the end of the year 2017, at the close of the anniversary, 100th anniversary year, we will be opening up the church probably in December 2017.
That's phenomenal. Well, truly, it's a great project, and I know that you are very much behind it and helping to make it come about. Our hats are off to you, Father Alex, there's no doubt about that. Let me ask you a final question. What is the best way for the average person who learns about this through the website of the Archdiocese, through the OCN site, through the cameras as they're watching the construction go up? How can people help? How can they make their donations?
Let me just say, and I want to, no matter what size gift, by the way, because we have the Stavros and the Archos Foundation is giving a $5 million donation.
Tremendous.
But the church, as the Archbishop said, it should be from all of the faithful. And so whether it's a dollar, $5, we are going to recognize it digitally at the World Trade Center at St. Nicholas of Ground Zero. We're also going to be, when the day of the consecration, every donor's name will be enshrined in the altar table by the Ecumenical Patriarch himself, because the Archbishop said that he wanted his All Holiness Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew at the consecration. So I think that if everyone in this country, every member of our archdiocese, gave at least $100, then we would have more than enough money, because our major donors have already come up and have given $35 million. So we need to step forward. It should not be, as they said, a rich man's church. It should be the way St. Nicholas was. He served the poor. He knew how to address the rich and have them give to the poor. But all of us together, living in this great country, to build a monument worthy of the memory of our parents and our grandparents and of the legacy that we want to bequeath our own children and grandchildren. St. Nicholas is that light on the hill that celebrates our faith and our culture in this great land.
Thank you very much, Father Alex.
Father Chris, it's always a pleasure talking to you, and thank you for the great work you're doing at seminary. We're very proud.
For more details, go to the website, St. Nicholas WTC, that's worldtradecenter.org. St. Nicholas, NICHOLASWTC, myocn.org. And of course, we'll have a link to that on our website at myocn.net. You're listening to Come Receive the Light for this weekend. I'm Mike Trout. Our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos. We are a nonprofit outreach, a part of the Orthodox Christian Network. And when you go to our website, you can check out the suggestions that we have for supporting this ministry, helping to keep us on the air and do so many other things that we are involved in. Again, on the website, just click on the donate button at myocn.net. Well, we conclude our broadcast today with a conversation led by the very Reverend Father Stephen Ritter, the pastor of St. James Orthodox Church in Buford, Georgia. Father Stephen Ritter has done a number of interviews for us in the past, and we appreciate his professionalism and spiritual sensitivity. You will feel that as we go through this conversation about something that has been a scourge in this nation. I don't think that's too strong a word, for sure, that has seen a dramatic increase as the internet has grown. Here's Father Ritter.
I'd like to welcome Dr. Albert Rossi back to the program today to talk with us about a very real problem that many of us don't want to address. In fact, it's almost become taboo: internet pornography. Welcome back, Dr. Rossi.
It's good to be back.
Well, this is actually a topic that you brought to OCN as something that you wanted to address. Why is it that you feel so strongly about this issue?
Oh, I have a real fire in my belly about this. In my travels, I've discovered that internet pornography is the most dangerous threat to Orthodoxy today and the most overlooked. I'm convinced of that. Priests all over say to me the single most frequent sin they hear in confession is viewing internet pornography. And virtually nobody is talking about it. Mm-hmm. And those who are and do, very few understand those who do understand the magnitude of the problem don't really know what to do about it. Mm-hmm. So in these few moments, I hope to provide some hope for those who are not in any way doing this, priests, lay people, parents, and I also hope to provide hope for those who are caught in the vicious net of internet pornography viewing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, a growing number of mental health professionals consider pornography as an addiction, just like alcohol or drugs. Is this mm-hmm. something you'd agree with?
Yes, and those many will liken internet viewing pornography as the crack cocaine addiction of the day, certainly the fastest growing addiction in the United States. And what is clear to me is that if we start with this premise, it's an addiction, then revolving door confession doesn't work. In fact, it makes the problem worse. Mm-hmm. So if someone came to, or counseling, confession or counseling, if someone came and said, I'm taking crack cocaine, it doesn't do any good to say, okay, well, I'm glad you confessed it or came to the counselor and said it. Now, please go pray and come back if you have a problem. That encourages denial, and the spiral just goes downward.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about the people who are looking at internet pornography. What kind of demographics are we talking about?
I'm really glad you asked. 87% of male youth who can get this on their cell phones as well as their computers and other gadgets, 87% of male youth and 31% of female youth say they use internet pornography, which means we're the first generation in history to be raising our children and giving our children their sex education on hardcore porn.
Wow.
I mean, it's absolutely, if we just look at the facts, this is what kids are looking at, and this is how they're being educated on how humans, men and women, relate to each other. Hardcore pornography, 87% males and 31% females.
Well, you know,
and
that
in demographics, just generally, hotels report that when they get different conventions, different types, when religious groups of all sorts come for a convention, internet pornography on the television is much higher than usual.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a link between authentic and inauthentic spirituality and sexuality. 37% of pastors admit they have a problem with this.
These are amazing statistics. And, you know, I would think that perhaps even though the one for men that you've mentioned is astoundingly high, I think mainly people would think, well, for men it probably will be higher. But yet, I think it was St. Basil the Great who said something to the effect of, if the woman pursued the man, then no flesh would be saved. And have we not reached that point in our own society as well? And how has pornography and its acceptance affected women and young girls as well?
It is ruining, because women are not getting what they want, namely love and to be cherished and treated like human beings who are equal partners. But it is ruining, because I taught at a secular university as a tenured professor for 24 years, and when I'd get into this and talk about what the girls are really looking for, and then they'd say to me, oh, Dr. Rossi, where are we going to find guys like you who are going to cherish us and respect us and remember our names? Well, it's circular. It's because the guys and the girls are they're just being dehumanized, that's all.
Wow. Well, there's also, of course, a lot of married adults who access a lot of pornography, and probably for most of them, quite secretly. I mean, what's the impact of that on a marriage?
Mostly men do this. Women usually don't know that the man is doing this, but they sense something's wrong. One woman, when she found out, said that retrospectively, she felt all along like there was a mistress in the house, but she couldn't identify it. There's a diminution of connection, of love, of intimacy. It warps every part of the marital relationship, because it now has a different mindset of expectation, and it's almost imposing this, I say, imagined person on my marital partner. It's dehumanizing.
Perhaps we should also make it clear that it's not necessarily, is it a simple question of lust or desire for many people? I mean, the Internet has been around for a long time, and some people, almost against their wills, have seen what was initially an exploration of theirs solidify into a nasty sort of habit, because this is such a secretive and hidden activity. Is it not true that Internet pornography leads us even into more discouraging things, like despondency or a loss of hope, and in some cases, perhaps an ultimate loss of faith itself?
Yes, it's a downward spiral into darkness, and it is swift into all the things you say, anger, depression, and loss of faith itself. It just is. And once one gets in it, then one becomes so warped, but thinks that's reality, that one begins vehemently to defend these behaviors. But I do want to provide hope. So a real question is, okay. Now, what's one step a counselor could take, or a person who's into this? And there's a wonderful evangelical piece of software available online called Covenant Eyes. It's all one word, Covenanteyes .com. Basically, for a fee, one can put one's email address in, then get someone else, trusted friend, to be an accountability partner. And once it's set up, it sets up like a snap. Every week, then the accountability partner gets a short summary of the other person's Internet activity. And anything that's porn is in a little box in the top. And in my case, you know, being teaching and so on at a seminary and giving lots of talks, I am an accountability partner for bunches of people every week. I get a little review of what they're watching. And, of course, that then, that transparency prompts the person to say, uh-oh, I don't want Rossi or whoever else it might be to know what I'm doing, so I don't think I'll do this. And when I do get, as I do, from persons, and it says this person was viewing this and this and this and this, then I email back, you know, very softly, is this something we should talk about? You know, not condemnatory or anything. But frankly, I am a subscriber to Covenant Eyes. I want to mention one other thing that's vital. That is to say, you know, in our country, we have gone from alcohol and prohibition to, as the drug of choice then, to heroin and cocaine and other drugs then. Now the drug of choice is internet pornography, because what it does to the brain is exactly the same thing as those other drugs, alcohol and coke, cocaine, did. It's an addiction and needs to be treated as an addiction, and it can be overcome. So there's an organization called Sexaholics Anonymous, S.A., that has meetings in virtually every city of the United States and around the world.
Well, Dr. Rossi, we've covered a lot of ground today, and I know we've really barely scraped the surface of this issue. As a closing thought, is there anything else that you would like to say that might help someone who is coming to terms with this problem?
Yes, the first thing to do is take baby steps, is to admit to somebody else that this is a trusted friend, that this is what I'm doing, and I just need to say it. Satan's great weapon is isolation. So anyone who is doing this at all, especially someone who might be doing it routinely, pray. Have to pray to Christ. Christ can do for us what we can't do for ourselves. And then say something to somebody. This is what I'm doing, and my first step is to try to surrender to the Lord and surrender to you by becoming open. And it's hard for me to admit that I'm doing this, and it's such sludge. I've had young men cry in my office when they start to talk about doing this, married men with children. But the first step, last words, is transparency. We need to get out of being Lone Ranger. We need to at least involve other human beings in our struggle.
Well, listeners, this is a topic that's very uncomfortable to talk about, and that most of us would rather just sweep under the rug. Mm. But as Orthodox Christians, we must face up to it and realize that we are as susceptible as anyone.
Men, we certainly are. It's a click away, and our youth are being eaten alive by it.
Oh, yes, and laity and clergy. Hopefully there'll be many more discussions about this. So, Dr. Rossi, I'm really glad you were willing to talk with us about this very serious nature of this problem, and hope that we've at least cracked the shell of a very forbidden topic.
Thank you very much for offering this and spreading the word. I'm so admiring of Come Receive the Light and all that you're doing there to get the word out as far as we can.
Well, listeners, for other wonderful interviews with Dr. Albert Rossi, please visit us online at myocn.net. Dr. Rossi, many thanks.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
You're listening to Come Receive the Light, a weekly production from the Orthodox Christian Network. And I'm Mike Trout. Our host is usually Father Christopher Metropoulos. Special thanks to Father Stephen Ritter for his help this week. We'll be back at this same time next week, and I hope you can join us. Do let your friends know about the broadcast. We're on the web at myocn.net. That's myocn.net. You'll find our blog page there, The Sounding. Join in. Get involved in the conversations. You'll also see our Orthodox Christian News video each week that brings you up to date on what's happening in the Orthodox world around the world. It's all on myocn.net. Until we meet again, remember to always have faith in what you listen to.